Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, today we're talking about two of my favorite things, travel and food, and in that order. Or should I say we're actually getting ready to travel, because often we save our money and we make these big plans for a long, long time for a big, exciting trip months in advance, and we forget to prepare ourselves. Ending the show today, Chef Dan Barber was named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People in the World in 2009. He's a multiple James Beard winner and was a noted champion of the farm-to-table philosophy. He's joining us today to tell us why that's not enough and to introduce what he calls the third plate, which is also the name of his book. It's a New York Times bestseller and was awarded the Best Book of 2014 title by Mother Jones. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome a husband and wife team known as America's Healthy Travel Docs. Let me tell you a little bit about each one, and then they'll bring them on and we can find out more. Dr. Anit Haque is a practicing chiropractor, certified fitness trainer and wellness expert. She's the author of Chiropractic Way to Health, A Healthy Backpack, A Healthy Spine, and Exposed, 10 Secrets to Health and Happiness. Dr. Haque focuses on natural health and wellness, and her main focus is strengthening the body while correcting spinal issues. We'll also be talking with her husband, Don Parker, who is ACE certified. He's been a lifelong advocate of health and fitness. After receiving personal training certifications in AFFA and ACE, Don left his corporate job in America to follow his dream of helping others with their fitness and training. And together, Don Parker and Anita Haque work to enhance the wellness of their clients, and they've developed exercise videos for those who suffer from back pain and want to lose weight. Don Parker and Anita Haque. Dr. Anita Haque, welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Thank you for having us.
Well, very good. And this was very serendipitous, as I said, because I was looking for something like this, because a lot of our listeners are interested in travel, and we have a couple of travel shows coming up. But I know from myself, the last two times I did international travel, I ended up in the emergency room both times with acute bronchitis. I think all the stress of getting ready before I went, and then the flight and the weather change, it did not sit well with me. So I made plans this year to start working on myself before I take a trip this year. And this is what you specialize in. So I'm really curious, you know, how did you guys get together? Did you start working together before you got married, or did you get married and then start working together?
Well, actually, we met while we were working. I had a building, a training building right next to her office that was in the same shopping center. And she was just opening up her business. So she came around and introduced herself to all the business owners, and I just happened to be one of them.
And then I couldn't get rid of him ever since.
Well, it's
exactly. That's exactly how it happened, so, and I'm going to stick to that.
So, yeah, once we got married, we ended up finding a facility together, since we crossed, you know, reference my patients to fitness and strength, and he, you know, sends his clients to get their back and, you know, get their diet taken care of. So we ended up just cross-referring so much, we decided to start a new facility together, and that's what we did in 2009.
That sounds like a pretty dynamic combination there, and you're both serving your passion at the same time you're helping others. So let's talk about this thing about how we put all this effort into making travel plans, but we forget about ourselves. Why is it so important we focus on ourselves at the same time we're making these other plans?
Well, number one, people always, they think about their trip before they think about themselves, because they're so excited about their trip. They try and take care of everything they can take care of that goes along with the trip, as opposed to taking care of their self first and then taking care of the trip stuff. So that's what we found. A lot of times when people schedule their trips, they mostly do the things that they need to do as far as packing, taking care of the house, taking care of the dog, and all that kind of stuff before they go on their trip.
And, you know, basically what we found is that, you know, we'd have patients and clients who'd go on these amazing vacations that they were so excited for, and they'd run themselves kind of to the ground before they went on these vacations because they were, right. you know, trying to get their work done and things like that, that they didn't get to enjoy their trip. They get to the trip, and sometimes we'd even get a phone call, and it would be things like crisis calls, like, look, I'm in pain. I can hardly move from being on the flight, or, you know, hey, I don't know what to do. I slept on a different bed. My neck is, like, I can hardly turn it. What do you think I should do? So we started coming up with, we need to address this because people forget that when you do plan a vacation, that you want to prepare your body, which is going to be taking you to enjoy the vacation, and not just everything else.
Yeah, and you're dealing with a lot of things that you're not that you don't deal with on a regular basis, like the altitude and how far are you going to, how long are you going to be sitting? You know, how much rest are you getting before you go on your trip?
Are you trying to lose weight before you get on your trip?
Exactly.
Are you trying to do some sort of activity that you don't usually do, like, you know, zip lining or ATV riding, and maybe you need to know how to prepare your body so you have a good time.
Right.
Yeah, I've had people schedule a whole itinerary of what they're going to do when they get to their trip.
Right.
And they probably do maybe one or two of them once they get there, because by the time you get to your trip destination, you're already exhausted.
Right. So I have a couple of questions that I want to talk about then, and I'm going to base some of this on trips that I've had because I've heard people who've had the similar experiences. And you just mentioned zip wiring. I went zip wiring in the Sierra Madres down in Mexico, which was absolutely fantastic. It's one of the longest zip wires there is. And, you know, going from tree to tree was no problem. But I suddenly realized, oh, my, we're now, when we landed, at the bottom of a valley, and I have to hike back up this mountain.
Oh, my gosh.
And, yeah, that's the hard part.
Yes, and I had, I get asthmatic allergies, and that particular day happened to be a very hot day, like it was like a hot a hairdryer blowing in your face, you know, hot air. And so I had difficulty breathing on the way up. And I know one of the things you talk about is, and I don't know why this didn't strike me before I went, but, you know, I live at sea level. If you're going to go up in altitude, you want to work on your lungs a little bit. So how do we prepare for that?
Well, there's different tips to actually prepare for lung capacity. Some of the things that we do with our clients and patients is we might address that if we have enough time by putting them through some activities to improve their lung capacity. That might be simple exercises such as, you know, walking more on a treadmill on an incline for a certain period of time to improve their lung capacity. Some of the other things that people forget with altitude is drinking more water. That is just vital, so simple, but it just goes out the window because you're sometimes drinking more alcohol than you are drinking
exactly.
water on a trip. And then there's also some deeper breathing exercises. They're like yoga style, a breath of fire that can make a world of a difference even before your trip and also while you're experiencing a shortness of breath or some sort of altitude sickness, if it does happen, that we give to clients, you know, to slow down their breathing, focus on maybe plugging one nostril in at a time and taking a full deep breath in and out 5 to 6 times to really get their breathing to calm down, get the oxygen back into their lungs.
And you know what? That's such a simple thing to do, the breathing, but it's probably one of the most important things that will take care of the cardiovascular system in your breath.
Right.
So breathing is essential. You have to be able to breathe correctly, especially at altitudes that you're going in.
And what's crazy is, Vicki, most people are shallow breathers in the first place, whether they're at sea level or not. Most of us are not even really taking a full deep breath in and out on a regular basis because we're so high stressed.
Yes, it's driving on the freeways all the time. I caught myself holding my breath several times.
Yeah,
last
exactly.
week. So you just mentioned water. So let's talk about water because this is a critical factor. You know, everything's so sterile in America. And, you know, I just had a friend who came back from Peru. Actually, she came back last year. And she's been sick off and on ever since because she got a parasite from the water, even though she thought she was being very careful. So what can we do? You know, we can drink bottled water. There's no guarantee there that it's going to be pure, though. Beyond that, what can we do to make sure that the water we're drinking is safe?
You know, that really depends a lot on...
That's a really good question.
Yeah, because when you're at a resort or a hotel, our general rule when we tell our patients is, a lot of times it's pretty safe. Most of the times, if it's, you know, a hotel that's 3-star, 4-star, you're kind of in a safe zone to ask. But the other thing is that people forget about the ice that they get
right.
into, you know, mixed drinks,
ice water.
You know, or you're out at a village, or you're going outside the resort and you're kind of venturing out to different restaurants. A lot of times, again, people forget about they drink the water, or they drink the ice cubes in the water. So at that time, we always recommend is definitely stick to bottled water.
Yeah.
You know, take bottled water with you from the resort that's, you know it's sealed. We also have something called an Alka wand that is portable that we supply to some of our patients, and you put it in your water bottle and you shake it up, and it has this powder that it emits that not only cleanses the water, but it also alkalinizes the water, which is also helpful for people now learning about different types of water, but it helps to get your pH level to be a little more alkaline, which is where you want your body to be, so you're functioning at a better level. Your body's going to function optimally. You're going to ward off toxins and sicknesses and viruses and things like that easier.
Okay, so there are things we can do. So we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I have a couple more questions for you about that, and then I have some fitness questions for you to make sure we're fit and ready to lug those suitcases around. Even though they're on wheels, it can still get tiring when you have to walk through airports. I think Heathrow is one of the worst. You have to walk about a mile when you're going through Heathrow Airport. Stay with us. We'll be right back with my guest, Dr. Anita Haack, and her husband, Don Parker. We are talking about how to get fit and healthy before you go on vacation. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, New York Times columnist and best-selling author Frank Bruni. Also, Audrey Levitano tells the story of how she built her woman-powered farm, Manual for a Sustainable Lifestyle from Homestead to Field. Keep up with show news on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and listen to podcasts at conversationslive.net. And don't forget to tune in live every Monday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Stay informed with news, traffic, and weather at the top of the hour, weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and we're talking about how to get fit and healthy and things you need to be concerned about when you're traveling. My guests are Dr. Anita Haack. She's a practicing chiropractor. You can find out more about her at haackchiropractic.com, and Haack is H-A-Q-U-E, haackchiropractic.com. And her husband, Don Parker, a certified fitness trainer. And you can find more about Don at donslifestyle.com, donslifestyle.com. So we were just talking about water. And of course, one of the things you mentioned during the break is when we're taking a shower, because I know when I lived in San Diego, they'd say don't even eat salad or fruit that's been washed in the water. You know, brushing your teeth, use bottled water. It depends where you're going. But also the shower can present an issue too.
Yeah, we say that our clients, you know, be careful when you're in the shower, because sometimes you have your mouth open and, you know, as you're washing your hair and water gets in your mouth and you're not thinking about it and you start drinking that water.
Right.
So make sure you have your mouth closed for sure when you're in a foreign country and you're not too sure about the water there.
Right.
Exactly. And it doesn't take much. It really doesn't to get a bug in you.
Yeah. So just use good common sense. So, and talking of drinking, you know, a lot of people do like to indulge a little while they're on vacation.
Yes, exactly.
And I hear that you have a hangover cure that'll get us back up on our feet. So what is that?
So it's actually pretty simple ingredients. It's you're going to use some clean, fresh, purified water. If it's alkalinized, even better. But that's okay if it's not. Just bottled water will work. And some lemon, a fresh lemon or lime. And you're going to add some ginger. Fresh is better, of course. So, you know, if you get your hands on some ginger, grate some ginger in there, or even ginger powder will work. A little bit of cayenne, which is also going to help kind of boost the energy up. And also a little bit of cinnamon. So this mixture, what it does is it kind of quickly hydrates your body. The cinnamon is going to help, you know, regulate the blood sugar surge from the alcohol. The ginger is an anti-inflammatory, natural anti-inflammatory, so it's going to get some of the inflammation down from, like, the headache and the soreness the next day or from, you know, indulging too much. And, of course, the lemon is huge vitamin C properties and immune-boosting properties, which you want to have after you have indulged, because your immune system goes down. That's when you can get more bugs in you.
Right, right.
Also, Vicki, there's another little trick that we use. It's called oil of oregano. And this is before you even get sick. This is before you do anything, before you get on the plane, after you get off the plane. And whenever we travel, we take that along with us. And it comes in a little dropper syringe.
Right.
And all you do is put maybe 2-3 drops up underneath your tongue, leave it there for about a minute. You know, and what that does, it kills any bacteria that's underneath your tongue and around your mouth.
Oh, and it also helps to boost your natural immune system, oregano oil. So, you know, it's so small, we travel with it. Anytime we start to feel even like a little bit run down,
exactly,
we also take it even when we're home.
Yes.
And it's amazing what it can do for your
body. It really is. Now, this won't work if you're already sick.
Okay, right, right.
This is something that you'll do before you get sick and when you travel and stuff like that.
Okay, well, good to know. So let's talk a little bit about fitness, because, again, going from my own experiences, you know, I think, oh, I'm fairly fit. And then I just remember going back to see my mom every year, who was in a wheelchair, and I found bending down to put the stirrups on the wheelchair and pushing the wheelchair, just different activities. So it doesn't matter what you're doing. You might be walking around a market. You might be climbing hills. You might be zip wiring. We use different muscles than we do every day. So what's a good regime for us to start a few weeks before? And how long do we need to start it ahead of time?
Well, number one, you should be working out anyway. Okay. Every day. Not every day, but at least 3 to 4 times a week, you know, just for yourself. But if you're going on a trip, the best thing you could do is take care of the cardiovascular system in your body. And you could do, like, just a small circuit training routine. It won't take anywhere from 40 minutes to an hour. And you can work on the upper body. I mean, this is a full body workout, and you're including cardio work in with that workout. So you could do that, like I said, maybe 3 to 4 times a week. And I also have exercises on my website.
Yeah, so we can prepare for that. But I think that she was saying that how long before, it really depends on what they're trying to accomplish. But our general rule is give yourself 4 to 6 weeks.
At least.
To prepare your body to do different types of activities.
I've had people come in to see me 2 weeks before vacation and want to get in shape before they go on their vacation.
They're just going to be exhausted if they haven't used their muscles, because I was telling you guys,
not a whole lot of time.
Yeah, when you start a new plan, it takes a couple of weeks for those muscles to get used to moving again, right? So let's look at, you know, there's been much written around DVT when people get thrombosis from sitting too long in airplanes, and we know they're getting more and more cramped every year, it seems. What do we need to do to keep our ourselves healthy while we're flying?
Oh, gosh, there's such a... Well, first of all, if you can get an aisle seat, then you're already at an advantage.
You're
because
already there, yeah.
You can do more in an aisle seat. And by that, what we mean is we suggest that, you know, while you're even sitting there, even if you're not in an aisle seat, while you sit in an airplane, it's important not to cross your legs, you know, for women especially, because a lot of times it's a habit. And doing that, it already constricts the blood vessels and the veins in your calf muscles. So you want to avoid that and just sit with your feet planted, both of them firmly on the floor, crossed at the ankles.
Exactly.
But number two is we suggest that you get up and move around if you can every hour. And if you can't actually get up out of your seat, because we understand we travel and sometimes mm-hmm. there's limitations on that, just by stretching in your seat, by moving your foot back and forth, stretching your legs out, just that small action, Vicki, will help to pump the blood back from your calf muscles back all the way up towards your heart. It'll get that pumping mechanism going.
Right.
Not only that, Vicki, when you're sitting down, try not to slouch in your seat, okay? You want to keep your spine straight, your lower back. So you want to tighten up those abs and keep that spine straight. And you may feel a little uncomfortableness when you do that, but it will mellow out, and your back will feel much better when you get off that plane if mm-hmm. you practice that on a consistent basis.
Right.
That's what a lot of people do. They sit on these planes for hours and hours, and they're slouching for hours and hours.
Yeah, yeah. It can get very tiring. And I also find, because I've done a lot of international travel, drinking water, not alcohol.
And that actually makes you even more dehydrated on an airplane.
Exactly. And there's another little trick to that, Vicki. For every drink, a glass of water.
There we go.
For every drink, a glass of water. And
keep them side by side.
Exactly. And you'll be amazed how much better you feel the next day.
Yes, yes. Well, I think you've given us some great tips. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you really think our listeners should know before they you know, as they're still planning their trip? Yeah, you know, I'm going to Barbados later this year sometime. And I've already started working on myself because I know I'll be in trouble if I don't.
Well, I think the last kind of tip that we would suggest to people is be mindful of, you know, if you are getting ready for a vacation or a cruise or even a long car ride drive, is prepare your body. Take the time. Think about the activities you want to do. What are your goals? It's so important to make that a part of your trip so that you can address it. Be prepared by making sure that you've got the right type of foods, your vitamins, your supplies. Don't forget those little things. And then always, always, always be sure that when you are going somewhere and you're not taking care of everybody, have a plan too, someone that you can call back home that can help you.
Very
Maybe
good.
You're looking out for a facility around there or a gym or something that you know that you have that advice for, just in case.
Great.
Exactly.
And tell me very quickly, what's the best website for more of this information and the exercises we can do?
That would be at hawkchiropractic.com.
Okay. hawkchiropractic.com. And then the other website, of course, is donslifestyle.com. So check them both out. Thank you both so much for being with us, Dr. Anita Hawk and husband Don Parker. Appreciate the information you shared with us today.
Well, thanks for having
us. Thanks for having
us. Happy travels.
Thank you. And please do stay with us. We will be right back. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals.
Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, New York Times columnist and best-selling author Frank Bruni. Also, Audrey Levitano tells the story of how she built her woman-powered farm, Manual for a Sustainable Lifestyle, from homestead to field. Keep up with show news on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and listen to podcasts at conversationslive.net. And don't forget to tune in live every Monday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
News, traffic, and weather? Now you can get your information fix weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
It's just a lie. You don't travel.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. I don't know where Eric always finds this music with traveling light. I like to travel light. Do you like to travel light, Eric?
Whenever possible, yeah.
We have a few minutes here before our next guest joins us, Dr. Chef Dan Barber, and I just wanted to catch up a little with Eric because we don't get time to chat. We usually cram the hour with guests from head to toe, so I thought we'd touch base a little bit. But do you have any travel things that you're wary of when you go, whether it's health, fitness?
Yeah, it can be difficult to eat healthy when you're traveling. That's for sure. So I try to at least make one meal out of the day, like something that's gonna definitely fortify me with, those needed vitamins and nutrients. Like, just seek out some vegetables because when you go to restaurants, a lot of the time they make every meal about the meat, you know, mm-hmm. which can be great, which is delicious, don't get me wrong. But if you go for a day or two without getting those veggies in, you really start to feel it. You feel a little more run down. So I think it's one of those things that you got to be conscious of, how you pick out your food. Because when you're traveling, you are almost always not making your food. You're going to restaurants three times a day. You got to be conscious of that. So,
you know, one thing that I was vegetarian for a long time, 8 years. And then when I stopped being vegetarian, I continued ordering vegetarian meal every time I travel, because I found it lighter and I didn't get that, you just get that bloated feeling when you're traveling.
especially
it can be
on the plane,
very uncomfortable. And I've found I don't get that with vegetarian meal. And also, now everybody will be ordering vegetarian meals, you get fed first.
That's a good tip.
And when you're on an international haul, you know, one trip took me 30 hours to get where I was going. And
were you going to Antarctica?
No. I don't even want to get into where I was going. I was going home is where I was going. But because of snow delays and it just everything, it took me 30 hours from door to door. And so you're hungry and, you know, you're smelling all this food come and you're getting hungrier. And I realized all the vegetarians were getting fed first. So I always order a vegetarian meal.
Smart.
But I do it for another reason, too, because I find it sits better with me when I'm traveling.
Good idea. I'm going to try that next time.
Yeah. And, I mentioned I'm going to Barbados later this year. I'm going to actually meet my sister. My sister and her husband were going. And I thought we're going to be two extremes. My sister's going to end up there on the island with like 10 suitcases. And I'm going to have my little, hopefully I can get a carry-on.
Well, people forget you can wash things.
Yes.
While you're abroad.
It's entirely possible. I plan to be on the beach, in the water, all the time. So I'm just taking little wraps, and I figure if I need anything, I can probably buy it there.
Well, you know, as far as traveling, like one thing I did this last time I went to Europe last year, and this worked out fantastic for me, and I don't know why I didn't think of it before. But I've got a lot of socks that are on the edge of being worn out. They're literally like, they're not to the point where I would throw them out here because it's, you know, they're still functioning as socks, but they're getting towards the end of their life. So I took all those socks and packed those exclusively for the trip.
That's what my brother did.
And then each day, rather than putting those dirty socks back into my luggage, I threw them away because they were going to be tossed out anyway. And so it was great. I thinned out some of my clothes and my bag got lighter as I traveled on, as opposed to getting heavier as it often does.
Well, you know, when my brother came, he did the same thing. He had one little hold all because I'd said to him, you know, we can wash clothes every day if we need to, because we were coming home for, you know, most evenings. And so he had one little hold-all, and his camera bag was actually bigger than his clove hold-all. He bought a couple of pairs of jeans while he was here, because, get this, my washing machine broke the very day he arrived. but we went out the next day and bought another one. But and he did the same thing. He brought old socks, because when he was leaving, I went, Colleen, you forgot your socks. And he goes, oh, no. He said, you can have them. And I'm like,
you can have them.
I looked at them and I was like, oh, that's so sweet, you know. And then I look at them and I went, they've got, well, not holes in, but they were getting a little threadbare around the heel. And that's why he did it, so he could pack some gifts on his way home and leave his old socks behind for his sister, which I thought was very generous of him.
Smart. But, you can have them.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything worse than being overloaded when you're traveling. It's stressful enough,
right?
And, you know, if you've got to remember, oh, I've got four bags, and count them, and with the extra charges on the planes now as well, it just doesn't pay you. It pays you to travel lightly.
It definitely does. And that is one thing you do have to keep in mind, that you know, sometimes you go to a place and then you travel to other, like, sub destinations, like I'll fly to London, and then maybe I'll pop up to Glasgow, or I'll pop over to Dublin or whatever. There are restrictions on the weight of your luggage. So
that's all right.
Sometimes what you can do is you can if you're returning to the place that you flew into, you can store your bags either with friends, or they have services that'll let you store your bags for, you know, $10 a day. And sometimes it ends up being cheaper than paying those extra fees for your short flights.
That's right. Most of the train stations, for one, and certain airports, too, have storage lockers for you. So if you're going back to the same place, it makes perfect sense to that.
And it's another way to travel light. So
right. So do you have a trip planned this year? We've been so busy. We rush in and out, and you know, but we don't seem to get time to talk very much lately.
Yeah,
it's for those who don't know, Eric's got a new job. He's also operations manager now, so we get less of him.
Less time to chat before the show. But yeah, I have this vague idea that I may go to Hawaii this year. That's a hope, but I haven't had the time, unfortunately, to make concrete plans to do that. But I hope to possibly do that sometime in the fall, because why would you go in summer? We have the most glorious summers imaginable here. So I hate to leave the Northwest in the summertime. But when it starts cooling off in the fall, that seems like a good time to go get some extra sunshine.
And anywhere in particular that you would go?
In Hawaii, I'm a newbie. Everybody else seems to have been to Hawaii, but I haven't. So I thought, well, maybe I'll just take one of these vacations where I get to go sit on a beach and relax for a week or so. Because normally, I go someplace and then I want to see all the sights, you know. So I'm doing a ton of walking, you know, a ton of running around. I'm going city, 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 city. trying to see all that the world has to offer.
Right, right.
And then when I get back, I'm exhausted. I'm worn out. So I thought, well, maybe this time take a trip where I'm just going to relax, take it easy, and not do a whole lot of things. I'm sure I'll see some sights when
right.
I'm there, but my main goal is to just take it easy. Have some poi, maybe.
That's my goal. I have not had a vacation where I just go, where I didn't have an agenda for the longest time, because I've, for last 15 years, been going back to England 2 or 3 times a year, you know, to see my mom and take care of my mom mm-hmm. While my sister had a break, etc. So I just haven't had that, you know, let's go spoil ourselves kind of vacation
right.
forever. So it'll be interesting to see a new place, because I've never been to Barbados before. Mm-hmm. And I love the culture. I grew up with reggae. So it'll be really interesting to, I believe it's a very colorful island. Have you ever been?
I have not. You know, I haven't been to any of the South Pacific
islands. Our hotel is very colorful. It's right on the beach and very colorful. So, and so I'm just kind of looking forward to a whole different environment.
It sounds like a lot of fun. And I got to say, I'm kind of envious, but I'm looking forward to hearing all about it and seeing the pictures when we get back.
Yeah, me too. I'm planning paddleboarding and kayaking and all that good stuff. And then I don't know if you watch this program. It's called River Monsters with Jeremy Wade, a British biologist.
His name is Wade, and it's
Jeremy Wade.
And it's River Monsters.
Yeah,
okay.
And he travels the globe, and it's fascinating. I don't know why I got hooked, excuse the pun here, on this fishing show, but he goes all over the world and captures fish that could possibly be man-eaters or just have caused havoc in the waters. And
seems like he should have named it Wade in the Water, but. That's just me.
But it's amazing. And so I was watching this, and he happened to be out in the Caribbean on one of the shows, and I'm like, oh, maybe I'll stick close to shore when I go out kayaking. But there's one good thing. At least you'll be able to see the bottom of the water. All right. I think we'll take a quick break. We'll see if our guest is available right now. And we will be right back. We're going to talk with Chef Dan Barber about the third plate, Field Notes on the Future of Food. And this is a New York Times best-selling book. And the Washington Post said that not since Michael Pollan has there been such great work on food. So looking forward to talking with him about that. Stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services, if you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Dr. Bill Burlingame, we cover the world of animals. This week, May 3rd, it's Shelter Rescue Sanctuary and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday. We'll talk about the birds at Mollywood, macaw rescue and sanctuary, and the ongoing stolen birds investigation. We'll find out what's up with Albreed Equine Rescue, and of course, the latest news and developments in the ongoing saga of the elephants, Bamboo and Chai. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Lewis and Clark would be proud. We're exploring new territory on the air every day right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And I'm very pleased to welcome Chef Dan Barber to this segment. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He is the executive chef and co-owner of Blue Hill, a restaurant in Manhattan's West Village, and Blue Hill at Stone Barns, located within the nonprofit farm Stone Barns Center for Food and Agriculture. His opinions on food and agricultural policy have appeared in the New York Times, along with many other publications. He has received multiple James Beard Awards, including Best Chef New York City and the country's Outstanding Chef. In 2009, he was named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People in the World. And he's now New York Best Times Selling Author and was also awarded the Best Book Title of 2014 by Mother Jones. And this book has now come out in paperback. It's called The Third Plate, Field Notes on the Future of Food. Chef Dan Barber, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here. Thank you.
Well, you're recognized, I think it's fair to say, you were recognized as being a farm-to-table supporter, but throughout the 10 years it took you to write this book, you realized that's good, but it's not good enough. So let's begin with how this all began for you. I believe you had an aha moment when you visited Lakeview Organic Farm. You had a major shift in perception. Tell us what happened there.
Well, I should say I had the first shift I had this aha moment and shift in perception when I first tasted what came off the farm of Lakeview Organic Farm, because we were utilizing his wheat primarily. Which I was completely excited about, because it's this old variety we called Emmer, but we baked this bread with 100% Emmer, so 100% whole wheat bread, and it just was this jaw-droppingly delicious. It was the kind of thing that everyone talked about in the dining room. So we ended up giving this particular bread to every table as a course, because we felt it stood up on its own as a course and people paid attention to it. So I thought, I'm writing this book, I'm gonna not just celebrate this wheat, but find out what is it about this wheat that is so delicious? What is it about the farming method that makes it so delicious? And so it's really the first stab at writing the book. And so I went up to the farm, and I'm standing in the middle of Klaus Martens, who's the farmer in Peña, New York. He and Mary Howell have been farming this land for 20 years, and it's about 2,000 acres. I'm standing in the middle, and I'm looking around, and I didn't see much wheat at all. I saw all these other crops like millet and barley and rye and buckwheat, and I saw lots of leguminous crops like cowpeas and kidney beans, and then I saw, of course, cover crops. But I didn't see much wheat at all, and I realized that it wasn't very long into my, a couple minutes into my visit, and Klaus was speaking, and I said, I really have this all wrong. I'm sitting here glorifying the emmer wheat for good reason because of the flavor, but I'm calling myself a farm to table chef, or I've been called farm to table chef, and I've been wearing that on my sleeve because I'm supporting a local farmer and his local wheat, but I wasn't doing anything to support the entirety of his system. In other words, everything that I was looking at around me was planted because Klaus needed to plant it in a very complicated and timely set of rotations around his field that supply the fertility and break up the disease cycles that give us the wheat that we so covet. So I was both coveting and celebrating the wheat, but the wheat was a tiny fraction of what he was growing. He was growing everything else to get us the wheat, and he didn't have a market for any of the things that I just mentioned and the dozen of other crops that he needs to grow. Very small markets for them, and essentially he loses money on the transaction because they go into bag feed, and he you know, they're lost to animal feed instead of being fed directly to us. So I realized I needed to do something about that, and I realized that in that sense the farm to table movement had it a bit wrong, because it allowed you to use a farmer's market, or in my case, one product from a farm, and you know, sort of call yourself exalted, or call yourself, you know, a supporter of a local ethic, and it seemed to me it fell way short of the reality.
Right. So your whole philosophy now has changed, as you said, it evolved over the 10 years of writing the book to support the whole farm, and I know that. You have a whole new passion for soil, which you didn't have before. I wonder if you'd tell us about you use three metaphorical plates of food to describe the evolution of American dining, and talk to us a little bit about that and how we ended up with Third Plate, which is the name of the book.
Yeah, the first plate is I was using as sort of the very typical American plate of food for the last 60 or 70 years, and even going back further, actually much further, one could argue to the beginning really of our country, which is just a protein-centric plate of food, a steak, let's say, the steak dinner, and a little side of vegetables, and maybe some white rice on the other side of the plate. And it seems to me, and you know, this is a bit reductive, but I think it makes sense to say that one could argue that the second plate was born out of this farm-to-table movement, that the good food movement sort of got us eating steaks that were grass-fed or local, and the vegetables, you know, are now organic, and the white rice is, I don't know, no longer white, and maybe it's a mixture of whole grains or whatever it is. But so it's definitely the second plate is definitely better than that archetypical plate of food, but the architecture of the plate has remained the same, and that's where I call into question the value of the farm table movement to really change the landscape. And while it's changing our diets in the sense that there are better transactions there and better flavor on the plate, it doesn't rework what the ecology, at least in our region, demands, which is to relook at the architecture and also to think about the entirety of the farm. And that's why that example with Klaus is so important for me, because I was thinking of only one part and not what it takes to farm a healthy system. I wanted to look at what was the healthy ingredient, you know, and how is it grown, but not the system. The system is where the action is, I think.
Right. So you traveled the world. You share many of your stories in the book. Do you have a particular favorite story?
You know, I don't have a favorite story. Like, I'm sort of equal opportunity with the story, because I found them, you know, I was lucky because I met all these characters. But I will say that like my current favorite, if I can just dial into like tonight's dinner service, which is about to start for me in a few hours, I'm serving an example of the third plate. So we talked about the first plate and the second plate being, you know, this architecture with the same proportion but different sourcing of ingredients. Well, a third plate, well, what does that look like? And tonight I've actually got, I think, a pretty illustrative example based on what we're talking about. I'm serving a parsnip steak. So it's a parsnip that was grown, it's been in the ground. Jack Algeo, the farmer at Stone Barns, put it in the ground last March, and it was harvested just a few weeks ago in the beginning of April. And so it's been in the ground for a year. It's an extraordinary long time for a parsnip. Normally a parsnip would be in for, you know, be out of the ground in September, October. Anyway, kept it in all year, and it's so sweet and large and incredibly delicious, full of flavor in ways that you don't generally associate with a parsnip. For the ones that made it, survived it for the winter. And so we're utilizing that parsnip like a steak. We're roasting it very much like a steak. We're flattening it. Actually, when it comes out, it looks like a T-bone, you know, or a porterhouse. and we're rolling it out to the dining room on a carve. We're calling it a steak cart, and we're carving the steak tableside, and serving it with spinach, cream spinach, a classic accoutrement, I guess, of a steak, bordelaise sauce, marrow, the poached marrow.
Okay, it's lunchtime here. You're making me hungry.
I'm so excited about it because it's a good, it's a good visualization of what a third plate. First of all, you're taking that vegetable and centering it as the star, and utilizing meat for what it is, which is always umami and great flavor and richness. But it becomes sort of the sideshow because at this time of year, we're not raising actually grass-fed beef. It's not the season for it, and so what is the season is parsnips. So we kind of change our diet and covet these kinds of things in ways that that inculcate themselves into the everyday food culture, so that we don't demand this protein-centric plate of food twice a day, 7 days a week. And it's not delicious, but second of all, it's not something that the environment can carry for a very long time. It's not sustainable. So anyway, that's to me a good example of third plate and what I think we need to do more of.
Right. So you say the role of chefs is huge, of course, because they're leading the way. And, there's a bunch of stuff on television around food now. So I'm sure they'll follow. And then, it kind of trickles down to us as home chefs, if you will. But what kind of responsibility do you see that chefs have in directing towards this third plate and increasing sustainability?
Well, I kind of put a lot of weight on chefs in this book and on myself, because we've become these broadcasters of a message. We're culinary icons. It feels weird calling myself a culinary icon, but I guess, we are in a sense that, we have sort of this platform, weirdly, or not weirdly. I don't know. I mean, I it's definitely a new thing. And it seems to me that, the responsibility really isn't to save the environment or create purely nutritious food or to democratize food or to become community activists. I mean, I think we do all of those things anyway, but we do them when we really search out great flavor, like truly great flavor, not cheap great flavor, but really great flavor. That because it corresponds to great flavor and all the things that I just mentioned, good nutrition, good community, good regional activism, and good environmental stewardship are one and the same when you taste great food. I mean, it's axiomatic. You can't have a delicious piece of anything if it's not grown in the right way. And to do that, you need all these things, especially nutrition, by the way. I mean, that's a great lesson from the book that flavor is nutrition, that nutrient density is where we taste stuff.
Right.
That's a nice correspondence because, as a chef, you're in this game in a very sort of hedonistic drive. I mean, it's like to make myself look like a better chef. I'm making decisions that turn out to be quite good and beneficial for the environment, for you, and for our children, for the future. So the role of the restaurant, I think, is not to square this. Exaggerated responsibility on the chef, but it is to say that the restaurant is this place, a menu is a place to broadcast a message of a region, mm-hmm. and a region and a place is incredibly important in evoking memories and invoking the experience of pleasure.
It is,
So can we utilize that for the better, for the good? And I think that's where restaurants are headed.
And so we're almost at the end of our segment, Dan. The book is called The Third Plate, Field Notes on the Future of Food. So in 30 seconds, I know your wife says you're always looking for the hole in the donut. but are you optimistic about the future of food?
Yeah, no, I'm a very cynical person. But in this case, I actually am very optimistic, only because of what I just said, in the sense that the deal here is about hedonism and pleasure. And if the one thing that Americans are really good at, it's being hedonistic and paying a little bit more and spending a little more time for pleasure. And as long as we curate that right, as restaurants and chefs and anyone who cares about food does it in the right way, I think this movement has legs. I mean, I think we're going to be looking back on this 10 years from now. It's just the beginning.
Yeah, excellent. Well, the book is really well written. I love that you acknowledged that your mother died when you were four, and you didn't learn until recently that she'd longed to be a writer. I think she'd be very proud of you.
Very sweet of you to say that. Thank you.
For doing such a great job with this. Washington Post, again, says Michael Pollan, not since Michael Pollan has such a powerful storyteller emerged to reform American food. And I thank you for being with us, Chef Dan Barber. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
The book, again, is called The Third Plate, Field Notes on the Future of Food by Chef Dan Barber. And we're right at the end of our segment. I do have a couple of books to give away. I'm going to post them on Facebook, so look out on there for two books, The Third Plate, we're giving away later this week on Facebook. Thanks so much for being with us. I have to run. You can find more about us at conversationslive.net. Live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.